Tango Tango Papa 1934, November 23rd, 2015.
Have we seen the actual reality of a monstrous crime? Or merely an illusion, the product of a tortured brain?
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. Tom Wiles here with you, coming to you this evening from Hagerstown, Maryland. So I am on my way to, with a two-drop load I picked up in Rogers, Arkansas. First drop delivers to Carneys Point, New Jersey, which I don't think that's very far from the Philadelphia area. I believe it's kind of up in the Philadelphia area. And then the rest of the load delivers late in the evening on the 25th. So it's probably going to be in the wee hours of the morning on the 26th when I get unloaded. And that will be in Westfield, Massachusetts. So not going to be home for Thanksgiving, which doesn't really matter. However, I'm supposed to be home by the 30th for my time off. So once, now I don't know what's going to happen on the 26th. 26th is Thanksgiving Day. Now there will be some places probably that are either working or maybe they've got a load loaded, and then you know, I would end up doing a drop and hook or something. So that's always possible, or I could always just kind of end up setting on the 26th. But kind of cross that bridge when I come to it. But in any case, otherwise things are kind of going along pretty much the same as they always do. So anyway, I've got another voice file from Joel. Keep those voice files coming, because it ends up making for some interesting discussions. And I listened to the first part of this after I transferred it from Voxer to a digital recorder. I listened to the first part of it after I copied it to the computer. And he's talking about the iPad and I think, or at least specifically, I just listened to about the first minute of the voice file. And so I don't know what other topics he might end up getting into, but it's I don't know, it's interesting. I listen to a lot of as I've said before, sort of Mac related podcasts, although there are some other ones that I found that are specifically about the, there's this one called Surface Smiths, and that's a podcast that's about the, it's basically about the Microsoft Surface. And I don't know, I think they're about 35 episodes in or something like that. So I think they started it with when, you know, about or the Surface Pro 3. So there are other podcasts, but the Mac ones, I don't know, they're, most of those are fairly interesting. And the PC is so ubiquitous, and people are so familiar with it, that there really aren't podcasts that are specifically about Windows. I guess there's Windows Weekly, Leo Laporte thing, but I don't know. I've never listened to that. Some of the Leo Laporte podcasts I listen, you know, the only one I'm subscribed to right now is, he has this interview show that, or he's, the name of it's Triangulation, and once in a while, he'll have a really good someone really good to interview. Leo Laporte is a really good interviewer, you know, if nothing else. I did subscribe to Twit. I have in the past, but and sometimes it can be interesting, but I don't know. So a few months ago, I unsubscribed to the Twit podcast because it was, you know, sometimes he'll have people on there and they just start, and they, you know, and it's supposedly it's This Week in Tech. Well, sometimes he'll have people on there and it just goes off the deep end into, you know, it's not even tech related stuff. And I one day I just got disgusted with it and unsubscribed. But sometimes they can have some interesting discussions. And the reason I brought that up is because Joel's going to mention Twit here in this file I'm going to play. So anyway, I could keep talking, but let me just go ahead and play Joel's file. So here is Joel.
Hey, Tom. Still listening to your last show. I don't know if you listened to Twit. And it, basically they're saying the exact same thing you are. But they really, this, the problem that the iPad Pro has now, they can actually fix, very easily. And the problem is the apps that would really, really benefit from this. Like I think the one they, I think they recognize one is called Sketch, I think. But the, you know, several others, including if they redid the Creative Cloud stuff to fully work, you know, to basically, instead of having the kind of meh version they have now of iOS and Android tools, they could have an actual fully functioning version of Photoshop. But the problem is twofold. Do you really want to have a $100 iOS app that you can't try before you buy it? You know, that's one. The other is the App Store, and really Android one is kind of the same way. Both are set up poorly for developers who would like to charge for every version. And not necessarily have to do a subscription model like some have done. Like, for example, create some of the, well, if you do look at Office 365, Office 365, you have a subscription model. So, plus, the apps require a login to Office 365, at least a free version of it. Which I think there is at least a free version of it. I'm not sure. I don't think there is because I paid for it. I've been paying for it.
Okay, well, let me interrupt. Actually, I think if you get the iOS or the Android version of Office 365, I'm pretty sure on Android anyway, and so therefore it would also apply to iOS. Those apps are free. Obviously, they're limited, and you probably do, in order to use them, you probably do have to still have your Microsoft login. But I, as I recall, those are free. They're free to use. But I've had them installed. For example, I don't even know now. Right now, I don't even think I have Office. I might have Office installed on my phone. Maybe I do. I don't know. But chances are that I don't, even though I'm subscribing to Office 365. The problem is with the phone. Now, if I wanted to look at documents, let's say I've got documents in the cloud, which I do. The documents I have in the cloud right now are with Microsoft. Are the articles that I write for Geek News Central. By the way, I wrote an article about this too, and that, I don't know if you're responding to the article or not, but I did write an article about mobile apps, and I made my own little graphic of weeds. So you may have seen that. I don't know. But the problem, you know, I don't really need to look at my own documents. Now, I could see other people would, let's say you had different kinds of PDF files and maybe instructions or extensive notes that you needed to be able to look at that you had in the cloud and look at those on your phone, or let's say you had a spreadsheet you needed to look at on your phone. That's one thing. You're kind of consuming it on the phone. But unless you've got a keyboard, a real keyboard, let's say attached via Bluetooth to your phone, then you could actually type on it. Where was I at? I was at, I think it was at Office Depot, I believe. I'm about to burp, so I should probably just go ahead and do it, get it over with, or see if I can. Hang on. Excuse me. Hope that wasn't very loud. I held the microphone away. I was in Office Depot when I was home the last time, and they had it was kind of a little cradle thing that you could put your phone in, but it was a keyboard. It was a Bluetooth keyboard, you know, and it was a nice-sized Bluetooth keyboard that had a little kind of a backrest for you to put your phone against, and then the idea is that you have this thing and you pair it up to your phone through Bluetooth. It could be a phone or a tablet or whatever. Pair it up through Bluetooth, and then this thing has got this backrest, and there all of a sudden you could type on your phone comfortably with a real keyboard. So if you're going to do that, I could see maybe having, you know, an extensive word processor or spreadsheet or whatever where you're creating content on your phone or tablet. But without the keyboard, not so much. You're just going to be kind of looking at it, more or less. So that, they do have free versions for Android and iOS. I would swear that those are free. But they're probably, I think they are, they may be limited in some way, although I don't think they are. I don't think Microsoft has limited those. I think what Microsoft is trying to do is get people, the reason they're giving those away is to get people to subscribe to Office 365, and I think it's probably worked. I think that strategy has been good for them, because Office 365 is quite popular. From everything I can gather, that the software rental model has paid off. And by the way, you can still buy Office if you don't want to rent it. If you don't want to pay for Office 365, you can still buy the latest version if that's what you want. Of course, you don't get to keep it updated beyond a year. I think they give you like a year's worth of updates maybe, and that's it. But if they update that version, but if, you know, then when it comes to Office 2017, then sorry, you got to buy it again. So if you want to buy it, there it is. It's for sale. And I think it's even for sale in stores. If you want to buy physical discs, you can do that too, however you want to do it. But I like the subscribe version. It's, what is it, $79 a year, and I can install it on multiple computers. But obviously they only want you using it one at a time, and that's not a problem for me, because I'm the only one that's using it. So I can only use one machine at a time that I have it installed on, but nonetheless, it's handy to, you know, to be able, if you got more than one machine, that's very handy to be able to do. Now, there's nothing, you mentioned Adobe and the Creative Cloud. Well, what would stop Adobe from making really complex apps? Because if you're subscribing to the Creative Cloud, the Adobe Creative Cloud, then there's really nothing preventing them from making really sophisticated versions of mobile software, if that's what they want. I don't know if they've thought about that. But that's the only thing that's really stopping them. And then it would just be, it could be just available for the people that have Creative Cloud. So maybe someone should suggest that to them if they haven't already, and kind of see what they say. You know, wouldn't it be nice to have a real, let's say a real audio editor, either on iOS or Android? Wouldn't it be great to have a real functioning version of something like Adobe Audition that would run on Android or iOS and give you a lot, or probably not all of the functionality, but a lot of the functionality of Adobe Audition? That'd be great. You know, but of course you'd have to subscribe to the Creative Cloud. Now, that if they haven't thought of that, that might be one thing that would help persuade a certain percentage of people to go ahead and subscribe to it. Especially if people, you have the people that, or at least they keep talking about people that don't have PCs anymore, and you know, I don't know that those people are, you know, and they're just using tablets or whatever, and that's all they need. The, you know, they're not, don't have a computer anymore, don't need a computer. Well, you know, that might give those people a reason to subscribe to the Creative Cloud, because otherwise, if you don't have a computer, then there's really no reason to subscribe to it. So that might be a way, if Adobe would come out with some really sophisticated Creative Cloud apps just for mobile devices, that might be a nice little strategy for them to at least experiment with. But overall, there's a, you know, in this article, towards the end of this article that I wrote, I had at least a paragraph of questions, you know, just kind of questions that you'd ask yourself. And one of the questions was, you know, what is it, you know, why are people willing to spend upwards of $1,000 or more on a mobile device, let's say their phone, for example, but they'll balk if they have to spend more than a couple of bucks on an app? Aren't the apps valuable to them? You know, and then one of the other questions I asked, what is what value does the phone have versus what value does the PC have, or what value does the desktop computer have? What value does the Mac have versus the phone or a tablet? Why is it that someone would be willing to spend hundreds of dollars on software for a desktop or a laptop computer, and yet they scream bloody murder if they have to pay more than a couple of bucks for a software application running on their phone? And so that's what led to the question, well, what is the value of the phone? The phone, let's say a phone, for example, mobile device, provides a certain value. But what value is it? Are you willing to spend money for more value, to add value to it? In the same way, how is it that you can spend hundreds of dollars on software for a desktop or laptop machine, conventional computer? Well, the reason is because it adds value to it. It takes the machine that you have, and it turns it into something very valuable. Or added functionality. Well, and that doesn't seem to translate so much to the phone, and I don't know that it's necessarily the app stores, although you can say with Apple, the way the thing's locked down, yes, it is. But on the Android side, what's to prevent me, let's say that there's a software developer that is willing to develop a really sophisticated program, and maybe he's going to try to sell it in the Android app store, but there's really nothing stopping him from doing it, from putting it up for sale. But on the other hand, with Android, you can always go around that and sort of sideload stuff on it anyway. Just turn off the thing where it, or You disable the thing that's blocking the third-party software temporarily, and then you can install whatever APK you want, the programming file, the installer file, and then turn that back on so that you don't inadvertently click on something and end up installing unwanted software. You know, turn the safety feature back on. But what is it that's stopping that from happening? What is it that's stopping someone from developing really sophisticated software for mobile devices? And that's a real question. So the other thing, you know, Apple, let's say, for example, Apple or Google could go ahead and develop sophisticated software and to a certain extent and make it free, maybe, or they used to charge for it. But so to a certain extent, Apple has done that because they've got their own video editor, the name of which, you know, I bought it, the name of which is escaping me, Final Cut Express or whatever it is, the mobile version is, or maybe it's just, I can't think of the name of that. The video editor on the Mac, iMovie. iMovie for your iPad. It was like $5 or something. And now it may be free now. I don't know if they made that free after I bought it or not. But Apple has developed some nice software for iOS and made it free. But would it have been developed otherwise, and where people were having to pay for it? Probably not. I don't know. So Apple, in that case, Apple or Google could add value to their mobile devices by coming up with more sophisticated software. But for whatever reason, they don't seem to be doing it. So, but it is kind of an ongoing quandary. But what I started to say these podcasts that I listen to, they're all talking about this very topic. Since the introduction of this new Microsoft Surface Pro 4, and then the subsequent introduction of the iPad Pro, they're all of these Apple podcasters are talking about this very thing, and a lot of them are sort of singing the company line that iOS has to remain iOS, and OS X has to remain OS X, and OS X should never have any kind of a touch interface, and iOS should never have any kind of a mouse or trackpad that's allowed, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, just because it's the Apple line, and that's why they sort of echo it. And then if Apple, let's say Apple does do both of those things, they make the Mac into a touch screen, and they add a trackpad and mouse capability to iOS, then all of a sudden they'll all just switch. They'll just do a flip-flop, and that's the way it is, and that's the policy now, and that's the way it always should have been. Kind of like the yes men in a lot of corporations. You know, if a corporation suddenly has a policy shift, then a yes man or a company man will all of a sudden they just go along with whatever the policy is, and it should have been that way all along. So, but they're all talking about it, and in this article also, I think I probably mentioned this before, but I've thought about it some more. Apple, I think Tim Cook is really reluctant to change, to really fundamentally transform iOS. I think he's scared to change it because the iPhone is such a gigantic cash cow, and the iPad itself was kind of is sort of like an afterthought. If you look at the in terms of the revenue that they're generating with the iPhone, the iPad is kind of like a little afterthought although there are a lot of companies that would be happy with that revenue by itself, just the iPads. But the iPads, the revenue has been going down, the sales have been shrinking, and I think Tim Cook is just really reluctant to make any fundamental changes to iOS for fear of damaging that cash cow, because Apple is precariously perched right on top of that iPhone, the continuing iPhone sales. And if they really did anything to fundamentally mess that up, then they're going to be in big trouble. And so I could go on and on. So let's listen to more of Joel's file here.
But either way, it doesn't really matter. That's a subscription model. That's the model that Microsoft chose to go with anyway, which seems to be where a lot of software is going nowadays. But if you're looking at somebody who's more or less a traditional developer, how in the world can you do that model on either Android or the iOS App Store? If Apple made a way for developers to charge for every new version, as well as to have multiple versions in the store, that actually could benefit Apple with regards to the iPad. It would basically kind of change things back to the original development model, which worked for years and years and years.
Okay, now there's also another problem that's on the iOS side that, as far as I know, isn't on the Android side. And that problem is Apple itself. Why is the App Store for iOS constructed the way that it is? It's constructed so that Apple, what do they take, 30%? Of all of the sales price, 30 every time you buy an app, let's say, and I think it's 30%. I'm pretty sure. So you say you spend $2 on an app in the iOS App Store, 60 cents of that goes to Apple. That's a pretty good chunk, and that's just pure. You know, you could say, well, it's pure profit for Apple. Of course, Apple develops the hardware, and they've developed the market, so they're obviously entitled to something if they want to charge for it. But, you know, and I think the only reason they can do that is because Apple, because of the cult status of it, then they're able to charge, because it's the... Apple is kind of the in thing, and you know, so with all the cool kids, they have to have their Apple stuff, and so then Apple is able to take advantage of that because they've got all the cool kids that have to have their Apple stuff, and so they can charge. So the way Apple has that structured is not to benefit the developers, no matter what they say. It's really to the benefit of Apple. Which is neither here nor there. So that's just the way it's set up. And so at least on the iOS side of the equation, that is also a big influence, the way they have that store set up. Now let's say that Apple decided, well, we'll go ahead and let developers do a subscription model, just like the Adobe Creative Cloud for the desktop computer. Let's say that WhatsApp, or I don't even know the names of these applications, I just hear people talk about them. Let's say WhatsApp, and I don't know if that's a paid thing or whatever it is, but let's say that it's paid, and let's say that the WhatsApp developers decide, we're going to do a yearly subscription model for WhatsApp. And let's say all of the people that are using WhatsApp for iOS are going to pay, everybody's going to pay a $9.95 annual fee to WhatsApp so that they can continue to use the WhatsApp. Now, if Apple would allow it, then WhatsApp could just put the version on there, and people could download it, and of course they'd have to sign up and use it for 30 days, and then at the end of the 30 days they could buy the pay the $9.95 annual subscription, and then the app would continue to work. Otherwise it would stop working. I don't think Apple would allow that sort of model, because Apple wants that cut. They want a cut of everything that goes through the store. And so then people have come up, you either have to buy you can't have any trial versions. So you either have to, and you can't just keep give free updates. You got to sell each update as a new version. And of course, that's structured. If you think about it, that's structured so that keep people making those purchases. And every time someone spends a dollar in the App Store, Apple gets 30 cents. So it's the Apple, on the Apple side, the Apple App Store is structured so that Apple takes in the maximum amount of money. And so that's the way it's structured. Now, on the Android side, I don't think Google isn't doing anything similar, as far as I know. I don't know if Google takes a percentage. I really don't know. They may. Maybe they do. I don't know. But I would think that they probably couldn't. I think for some reason it sticks out in my mind that they don't. And because if someone really wanted to sell a Google or an Android app, then you just go around. People can easily go around Google, as I mentioned before, by simply turning off the block for third-party software, temporarily turn that off, install your apps or whatever you want to install, and then whatever program you've got, and then turn it back on. You don't have to get stuff through the App Store. Now, it's better if you do, but because of the, theoretically, you got an added layer of security. If Google vets the apps, same way with Apple, although as we've seen with Apple and Google both, that software vetting process isn't necessarily any good, because you can still end up with malware on your device, spyware. That recently happened with Apple, with iOS, certain applications, the Chinese thing where they had the wrong version of a convenient version of the Apple development software on the Chinese servers. And then the phone or the apps that were created with them would allow the bad guys to gain access to the user's data without anybody's knowledge. So it happens on both sides. So I think in order for it to work, in order for any of this to work, it's going to have to be a proven model, and the proven model really is staring us right in the face in the form of desktop computers. That model has not been, obviously it hasn't been perfect, but on the other hand, the desktop software model over the years has worked. It's worked for large companies like Microsoft and Adobe. And it's worked for a lot of smaller developers that developed and sold versions of Windows and Mac desktop software. So that model has worked, but it really kind of goes back to, what are mobile devices worth? What is it that, why is it that someone will only spend a couple of bucks on software for their mobile device, maybe $9 or $10 at the most, and then complain about that as being very expensive, why is it that they'll do that when you go back to your desktop machine and you can spend $200 or $300 without even blinking an eye and be happy that you spent the money? And, you know, and or if you haven't spent that much, how many, you know, all of us have spent at least $50 on a program or $100 on a program. I've done that a few times. Personally, I've spent that much money, or $100 at a whack or more. Maybe $120 or upwards of $150 to get a piece of software for that would run on a desktop machine. So it comes back to, what is the value of these pocket devices? And so in order to, as they exist, what is the value? Now, what could you do to add value? If you, you know, in order to add value to, let's say, a phone, what would you do? Or a tablet, what would you do? You, well, in the case of a tablet, well, I think you'd do what Microsoft has done. You'd come out with the Surface Pro line, and it would be a computer. It could be a computer, it could be a tablet. It could be a tablet that could take the place of a laptop. And then you have a value-added, kind of a value-added device. And I think the same thing could be done with a telephone. Do something that is going to make that device more productive, where someone is willing to spend the money on the software. You have kind of a chicken and egg program or a problem going on. So, but this iPad Pro is interesting because these people that I'm listening to, they want they've got the keyboard, and they. Now they're talking about they're trying to reach for the trackpad, and it's just not there. And then they're complaining about having to reach over the keyboard to manipulate something on the screen. And how Steve Jobs railed against that idea, the idea of a touchscreen laptop. So they're in a terrible quandary, and yet these same people are still making fun of the Microsoft Surface as being some kind of weird thing. Ask Microsoft. I think Microsoft is selling about as many of these as they can possibly make. So Microsoft has had great success with the Surface Pro 3, and I think they're having even greater success with the Surface Pro 4.
I'm not saying that that's the best model, because depending on what you're talking about, that also could generate a lot of security vulnerabilities and stuff like of that nature. Although I don't think desktop apps have near that problem. But apps like browsers and stuff, those definitely need to be updated with regards to security. Any kind of server quality software absolutely have to be updated with regards to security. So I think either a desktop or a app, like an Android app or an iOS app, kind of have a different, they don't have the same kind of issues. I'm not saying they can't, because they definitely can. Mostly because that almost every device that iOS or Android is on is definitely known to have a network connection. So, as are most applications nowadays. But, you know, either way, it doesn't, you know, they really didn't do the job that Apple usually would do to sell a device like this. You know, it would have been very easy for them to do to basically just transition and kill off Mac OS X, because it doesn't really look like they're that interested in maintaining those users anyway, at least to me anyway. You know, and then my favorite is the line that Cook had, and he says, you know, they're basically, he's kind of doing what Apple has done for years. He's saying that they're not working on one. You know, why would they tell you that they are working on one, for what is one thing? And two, this is what they've done for years. You know, Steve Jobs back in the day said nobody wants to watch a video on an iPod. Well, guess what? They brought out a video iPod. You know, nobody reads, and then they brought out their bookstore, which, you know, failed miserably, but, you know, whatever. You know, so, you know, generally the Apple mantra is, hey, we're not doing it until they do it. You know, so, you know, it's the iPad Pro looks great, but, you know, I'm kind of with you. You know, it's just not designed for work. The Surface Book and the Surface Pro 4, you know, you can actually use those to get things done because they run traditional apps. They run apps that you had for years, you know. And they also can run the other apps. But it's pretty telling to me, though, and I think they still have the sale going on. But if you look in Microsoft's App Store, they're having this 10-cent sale in both. It's not just apps, but it's also music and movies and stuff like that. So you can buy an application or a movie for just 10 cents. But I went through some of the applications and I said, I don't want to spend 10 cents on a single one of these. It wasn't worth it. So, you know, I personally wish that Microsoft would just forget the new style app, try and figure out ways to make what they have lighter weight, and then basically do a store based on that, which is kind of what Linux is trying to do, but it's not really been successful there either. Because how can you have an application store when most of the software that you can already get for Linux is free? So I say most of. You can buy for purchase software on Linux, but generally that's server level stuff. It's not something for the desktop.
Okay, now, if Microsoft, you know, Microsoft just tried to come up with a store idea, and I think initially when they came up with the idea with Windows 8, they thought that they were going to mimic Apple and they were going to try to lock things down and get people to, I don't know exactly what they thought. It was kind of a half-baked idea on Microsoft's part. The only way that App Store on Windows, you know, the Microsoft App Store, the only way that can really work is if developers can see some real benefit from it. And then, yes, they've got to make it attractive somehow for the developers. But that includes more than just making it attractive for the developers, but make it attractive for the end user. Now, I'll occasionally kind of look through this Windows Marketplace or whatever it is they call it. I'll occasionally look through it, and I did buy something. I bought that ArtRage program for $10, $9.95, and I was happy to pay for it. But if there are things like that, I would buy it. But on the other hand, if I go looking for regular Windows software, it's not in there. And so that's probably one of the areas that Microsoft could improve the Windows Store would be to, why isn't Adobe in there selling Photoshop Elements? Why isn't Adobe in there selling, what's the video editor? Premiere Elements. Why aren't those in the Windows Store? Is it because of Microsoft? Is Microsoft trying to charge a percentage? Because I bought those programs. I had to buy them through the Adobe website. And, of course, I had to download them through the Adobe website. I can't download them. I can't buy them through the Windows Store. And I did look to begin with. when I was looking for video editors and what have you, I was looking and I was thinking, well, maybe some of these bigger applications would be it. No, all we have are just a bunch of goofy little apps. And plus a bunch of games that I don't care about. So what's in the Windows App Store is kind of useless in large part. Why aren't the big developers in there? Why aren't why doesn't Microsoft encourage people that are selling commercial Windows software, which is still a viable big market? You may not see it in the, you know, when you go in your Best Buy store or you go in your Office Depot store these days, the software thing has shrunk. So it's not necessarily as visible as it used to be when you go in the retail, in a physical retail store. But there's still plenty of software. It's because it's all being sold online now, and that plus more, it's all being sold online through websites. Why isn't it in the Windows App Store? That would make it valuable. Put it all in there and not just these silly little apps. That's one place where Microsoft could have a natural advantage, because this is, after all, a desktop operating system. Why isn't the desktop software in the desktop operating system store? Even if it is it was aimed at Windows 8, you know, with the touch interface. But why isn't that software in there? Because that would be a big advantage that Microsoft could have. Convergence, converge that in there. Apple couldn't do that. They have their Mac App Store that the big software isn't necessarily in there either. There's a lot of software that's for sale. If you're looking for Mac software, the sophisticated stuff, a lot of that is not in the Mac App Store. Why not? Because they don't want to pay Apple's percentage. In order, you know, and then of course Apple's got all kinds of guidelines, or, you know, laws basically, is what you can do and what you can't do if you're going to sell, you know, regarding how your program is constructed, if you can, you know, if they're going to allow it for sale in the Mac App Store or not. So Microsoft could. Why aren't those apps, those big apps, in there? If you're going to have a store on a desktop operating system, let's have the real applications. That could be a real nice thing to have all of those programs. Just imagine all of the different programs that are available for Windows. Just imagine that there must be thousands and thousands and thousands of major applications that are available for Windows, and yet somehow. Where's the marketplace? Why isn't it on my desktop? When I have a copy of Windows 10, why is that not in there? That's a real missed opportunity.
And finally, I'm getting to the point where I can finish and listen to the rest of your show. I'm kind of the same with regards to loyalties with tools. Although I will always maintain certain systems. In my case, I can actually afford to do that. Most common people can't. The only thing I can't afford is Mac right now. And that's just because I haven't really found anything compelling that Macs do anymore that a Windows machine can't do. But the fact about you're talking about the telemetry or the quote unquote spyware in Windows, and you know, a lot. What's funny is the amount of people you hear complaining about it that don't truly understand it, including some of the free and open source brethren that I will friends with. I'm still friends with them, and I'll always be friends with them because I don't give up on my friends. But I also do not ascribe to a lot of their attitudes. They are open source only, the best tool for the job kind of guy. always kind of have been. So, and for them, they say the best tool is always Linux. And I'm like, nope, it's not. Not if it doesn't run your platform. Not if it doesn't do things that you want it to do. You know, things of that nature. But to get back to the telemetry crap, this stuff all started with mobile software. My friend is an Android developer, and I was testing some software for him. I had a crash. I told him, I said, I just had this crash with that. He's like, let me check a couple of things. And he says, oh, I know what it is. I'll push out a new update, you should get that update here. Or he sent me another update in email because, you know, some of this stuff was happening before you actually put it out on the Android App Store, which try that with an iOS device. I digress. Anyway, so because he was using Google Play Services framework in his application, he could actually tell that I had a crash, what I was doing when it had the crash. And because of that, he was able to fix it. All right. It didn't transmit any data that I cared about. It didn't do anything but tell the developer why the application crashed. And I think that's what a great majority of the Microsoft stuff is they want to know why it crashed. And they want to collect data. It's a smart way to be. And it's smart. I like the idea. It's a wonderful idea. And it's something I think it's time has needed. And some of the open source people will disagree with me. Well, that's fine. They can. I'll continue to use what I like.
And
it's no worse than a cookie in your browser. And unless you're super paranoid, then there's no reason for that, you know. And the majority of the web will stop working if you go crazy secure like that.
Okay, well, thank you, Joel. That's pretty cool. He could see that it had crashed for you, and basically he was able to figure out, I guess, from the crash telemetry data that what had happened, what went wrong. Now that you mention that, it's been a long time since I've had an Android application crash. I'm trying to think the last time that happened. Now, sometimes I have Android, you know, I will get Voxer sort of misbehaving, but I think that's probably Voxer misbehaving is probably more to do with if I'm happen to be traveling through a bad data area, it's more likely that something's going to go wrong with Voxer or something with the data area on the other end, the person that I'm talking to on the other end of the line. But I haven't had Voxer really just outright crash and close, or any other applications. If I think back to when I got my first Android device, I remember things like that happening occasionally. But in recent years, I have not had applications crash. Now, I have gotten into the habit of rebooting. I just go ahead and reboot my phone. It doesn't take long. Reboot the phone about probably every 2 days. I think it's just a great idea to reboot the phone. Now, I will have on occasion the Samsung tablet that I have. Galaxy Tab 3 or whatever I have it stuck to my windshield, a suction cup mount thing, and it's sitting there on top of my dash. And I use that for navigation and occasionally looking things up and Bluetooth audio, listening to podcasts, audiobooks, etc. Music sometimes, the Google Play Music. I will get that thing to misbehave, but it's my problem. It's not the problem of the, it's not the fault of the apps, but it's me having kind of put off rebooting it. Because it's very easy to think, well, should I reboot that? And then I just don't do it. And at some point, then the system probably runs out of resources, as all operating systems will do if you keep opening and closing and opening and closing and opening and closing different things. Sooner or later, you're going to have to reboot the system, start over. And so sometimes it'll kind of go wonky on me, and then I'll have to, there's been times where I have to just press the reset button and force the thing to turn off and then hit it and turn it back on. Or, you know, the power button, just hold the power button down for so many seconds and then it forces it to turn off and then hit it again and turn it back on. I have to do that occasionally, but I don't have to as long as I remember to reboot it every couple of days, then it's fine. I tend not to reboot that because I have it paired with the Bluetooth speaker, and for whatever reason, it doesn't automatically pick that speaker back up when it reboots, even though the Bluetooth is still on. It just doesn't do it automatically, and I don't know if there's probably a difference between the Bluetooth in the Samsung tablet versus the device the speaker that I'm Bluetoothing to that I have it attached to through Bluetooth. Now the phone will go ahead and pick those Bluetooth speakers back up automatically, but for whatever reason, the Samsung tablet doesn't automatically pick up this Bluetooth speaker that I have, and so I have to manually go into the settings and into the Bluetooth settings and then tap on the, it sees it, and I tap on it and it pairs immediately. So that is why I tend not to reboot the tablet. And so sometimes it will misbehave, but it's not the apps that are causing it. It's just due to the fact that I've had it open several, you know, the thing's just been sitting there on the dash running for hours and hours and hours with me, and it's not just sitting there idle, but, you know, in sleep mode or something like that. It's me constantly fiddling with it, opening and closing things. The Stitcher app that I used to listen to podcasts with, you know, back, I don't know, it's been a long time ago now, they had a thing in there so that you could force it to refresh, and it would go ahead and look for new podcasts, and then some idiot at Stitcher decided they were going to simplify the app, and so now the only way that I can find to make that do that is to, you know, back completely out of the app, you know, basically close the app, and then open it back up, and then that's the only time when you first open it that it, you know, I've got a check mark in there that it looks for new podcasts. So that's the only time that it'll refresh, which that's stupid because they should have it in there so you can do it without closing the app. So that's one of the apps that I'm constantly kind of forcing to refresh by closing it and reopening it. But on my phone, I've gotten into the habit of rebooting it every couple of days, and I really haven't had any problems with apps not working or just all of a sudden disappearing. Because I've seen that happen on my iPad a few times, but not so much because I'm not the only apps that I'm running on the iPad, and I do reboot the iPad every few days as well, especially if it starts acting wonky. I'll reboot it, that iPad Air, and I'm not really, all I'm really using that iPad Air for these days is to watch video. So mostly I'm watching YouTube on it. And that's kind of its function. So, in certain circumstances, I watch YouTube on it. And so that's pretty interesting. That's really great that they're sending that information, and then that just makes it better. So I, you know, with Windows 10, I haven't had any misbehaviors at all. It's just Windows 10 so far has performed flawlessly. Now, of course, on this Surface Pro 3, I do not, whenever I'm done with using it, I just close it. I've just gotten into the habit of just shutting it off. Shutting Windows down, turn the machine off. And the reason that I do that, as opposed to just making it go into a rest state, is because it boots up so quickly. It just takes a few seconds. When I push the power button, it takes under 5 seconds for it to completely boot up, and it's perfectly, you know, I type in my password, and then it's perfectly usable. And so there's really no point in keeping it in the sleep state. And then it's probably running the battery down, too, in the sleep state. But as opposed to just turning it completely off. So might as well just shut it off, because it only takes a couple of seconds, just a few seconds for it to reboot anyway when I turn it on. So I just go ahead and when I'm not using it, I turn it off. And whenever I do use it, just a couple of seconds and I got it on and I'm using it. And but Windows 10 is performing just absolutely flawlessly. I did get, I have had that some of the paint applications, like that Microsoft Fresh Paint, I have caused it to misbehave. But I found out, you know, what caused it to misbehave is if I had the paint application open with a file open and then pull off the keyboard and kind of force it into tablet mode, then it's that Fresh Paint application's kind of much more likely to mess up. And so if I don't want it to mess up, then don't have it open whenever, you know, if I decide I'm going to do something without the keyboard, I make sure that the application, especially the Fresh Paint application, is closed, and then pull the keyboard off and then open up the Fresh Paint application, and it opens up in the state where there's no keyboard. So it's basically probably opening it, the Windows has switched to the tablet mode without a keyboard or a trackpad. So that, you know, that's just one of those things, and there are always bugs in software, and so if you can figure out where the bugs are, then avoid them. So, I don't know. As I say, it's interesting at this point. You know, it's kind of interesting for me to listen to the Apple podcasts and listen to these people talk about their devices and, you know, and kind of observe the, it's fascinating sometimes kind of observing the Apple worship behavior and the subsequent rationalizations. I kind of enjoy that, but as far as me wanting any more Apple computers of any kind or any kind of Apple devices, really don't want them. There's just nothing that Apple's doing that I'm interested in. And that was really especially true, you know, even when I was still buying Apple devices, they started doing things that, taking things away, kind of really messing things up, taking things away that I was actually using. That really rubbed me the wrong way. And at this point, loyalty, which I never did really have to Apple, to the products, or kind of liking the products and liking the way Apple behaved initially, or seemed to behave initially, that kind of quickly went out the window. I'm just not loyal to this stuff. So I think Apple, obviously this iPad Pro is a very nice device. It's pretty big. Looks in those videos that I've watched, where they're kind of even comparing it. There's plenty of videos where they're comparing it with the Surface Pro 3 or 4. This iPad Pro is actually bigger, so the thing looks humongous by, So it's a pretty big iPad. And they've got the Apple Pencil and they're kind of playing with it and it looks kind of cool, but not to the point where I'd spend that kind of money on it. Because if I'm going to spend that kind of money, then I want something that's like a Surface Pro 3 or Surface Pro 4 that is actually a real computer too. So I can do all that touchpad stuff or the touchscreen stuff. Plus, I'm having a blast kind of sketching and painting, the paint thing on there. Having a blast doing that, which that was unexpected. I didn't even expect that would happen. So I'm enjoying that. And plus, I've got a real computer, and it's a very powerful computer. This computer's not a slouch at all by any stretch of the imagination. This machine is not some kind of netbook or something. This is a pretty power. This is the most powerful PC that I've ever had by far. It's remarkable. So I don't know. We just have to wait and see what happens. But in the meantime, it's kind of like, as I said before, it's interesting to listen to these people. And there's some of them that are saying, well, why are these people clamoring? Why are they wanting, they're whining, and they're talking about their own Apple people, their own Apple users, complaining that they want something more like the Microsoft Surface. And these fanboys that I'm listening to, many of them, or most of them, don't like that. And they're afraid that Apple's going to end up giving in and do some kind of convergence device. And they don't seem to want that. But they will. If Apple comes out with a convergence device, then all of a sudden they'll all change. It's kind of like they all said, why would you want a bigger smartphone? Why would you want a bigger screen? Oh, those are gigantophones, and they'd make fun of them. They're phablets. Well, have you noticed since Apple came out with bigger phones, the phablet word has kind of gone away and they're not making fun of them anymore? People don't make fun of big phones anymore because Apple did it, and then all of a sudden all those people were saying that they were too big. Most of those have, what phone do they have? The biggest one, biggest iPhone you can get. So anyway, it's an interesting topic, but I have the computer that I want. Love this machine. This Surface Pro 3, and then of course the Surface Pro 4, the new version, is really a great form factor because it's ultra portable and it's got great battery life. And you can use it as a tablet. It comes with a stylus, and you plug in your keyboard, and all of a sudden you've got laptop capability with a keyboard, a very usable keyboard with a very usable trackpad. And if I need more precision, I can even plug in a mouse if I want to. And then the USB 3 port makes it very easy to move files on and off the device. Can't do that with an iPad. I tried it. It's slow as molasses. I'm trying to move photos onto that thing or videos. It's a terrible process. Time consuming. Surface Pro 3, just, you know, go through it lickety split. So it's a much better productivity device. So, anyway, I think I want to go ahead and cut this off. Need to get headed towards bed. I got up pretty early this morning, and so it's probably about bedtime, and then I'll leave here. Probably I've got to be in Carney's Point, New Jersey need to be there before 2 o'clock. I've got a they had to readjust the appointment because the initial appointment was for today, and it just really wasn't because of the load got loaded late. It just wouldn't work. Couldn't make it work. Couldn't legally be there. So they changed the appointment to tomorrow, so that it's tomorrow afternoon at 2 p.m. at Carney's Point, New Jersey, Eastern Time. So I'll leave here. I've got about 159 miles from where I'm at here at Hagerstown, Maryland, to Carney's Point, New Jersey. So I'll leave here in time, and of course I got to drive around Baltimore. So I got to kind of drive through the Baltimore area. So I'll leave here in time to get over there. So let's see, if I leave here at, let's say I leave here about, I don't know, 9, let's see, if I left at 9, so I got 10, 11, 12, so that, I might not leave here until about 10, and that leave, that would give me 4 hours to get over there, and then, you know, I can probably get there, probably arrive about an hour early, so I probably want to time it so that I get there around 1 or so. And I'll leave some extra time in case there's traffic problems, because those can always happen. So anyway, I hope everyone is having a great week so far, and I will catch you later.
Remember, Trucker Tom is like Visa. He's everywhere you want to be.
Product reviews, restaurant reviews, photos, opinions, and more. Visit Trucker Tom's website at www.truckerphoto.com. You've been listening to Trucker Tom's podcast, and we'd love to hear what you have to say. All you have to do is send us an email to tom@truckerphoto.com.